from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Back in on the Gabe Coon Show! It is Tuesday, so you know what that means. What's customary is to bring on my guy from Bluff City Media, senior writer and content creator. That would be Christian Fowler on X at C Fowler BCN. We also have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast. Comes out every single Tuesday at noon. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, full-length video version on YouTube. Christian, what's happening, brother?
No, nothing much, Gabe. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I'm trying to keep up with the live stream of what's happening over at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. They've made some good progress, brother. I like to see it.
Quick progress, huh?
Yeah, no question about it. I do think it's kind of interesting, the reactions we've seen, though. I think most people are in the boat of absolutely loving it, because they're looking forward to the future and what it's going to hold at that stadium. But I've seen some people a little melodramatic about it, talking about the memories that they've had there, that type of thing. But in the end of the day, you still can create more memories. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think that's a very small portion of fans, but I've definitely seen it as well, and I can't say that I fully understand that. Now, I do get this version of it. If you're looking at, kind of the demolition phase that they're going into now, phase two, and you're saying, man, I've been to a ton of games here. It's kind of sad that it's changing a little bit, but at the same time, like, it's awesome that it's being upgraded. That I understand, because so many people have been to so many games there. Yeah, I agree. But then you have other people that are like, I don't understand why this is happening. I don't understand why they're doing this. It shouldn't be changed. Like, this is a historical stadium in the city of Memphis and stuff like that. And it's just like, okay, if they were demoing the stadium, if they were blowing it up and starting new, if they were building a different location, a completely new stadium, then maybe I could see that a little bit, just for people having the nostalgia factor of losing the Liberty Bowl. But now it's the same stadium. It's not changing. They're just demoing certain parts and redoing them, and you're not losing that stadium. And I think we can kind of draw a connection between that small group of people that feel that way about it, that feel that way about Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, to the building right next to it, the Mid-South Coliseum.
The one that's just begging, it's like screaming to be torn down every time I pass it.
Yeah, it should have been blown up years ago, and something else should have been put there, because it's really just a waste of space. And that one, I don't get at all. And so I think it's a similar sentiment between the people that are still like fighting to keep the Coliseum there, because there are those people that do not want it gone, are kind of the same crowd that don't want to see any change happening to Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, which makes no sense. We talked about this last night on the podcast, that as far as successful programs in college football go, I don't know if there are many, if any, stadiums that need a facelift more than the University of Memphis's. And I'm not saying in all of college football, I'm saying successful programs. I mean, you're looking at a team that's in the top 10 of consecutive bowl appearances over the last several years, or they're among the top 10 with consecutive bowl appearances over the last several years. A team that's in the top, I believe, 5 or 6 in home wins over the last several years. So successful programs with stadiums that need a facelift, I think Memphis is probably at the top of that list.
Yeah, and one thing I've always stood by is, like, your memories don't go away just because a place gets knocked down. You can still latch on to those memories. They're not going anywhere. We can write books. We can, you know, we can uphold the sanctity of those memories over the years. We have pictures. We have plaques we can put up. It's not going to be that big of a deal. I've never really, especially you brought up the Mid-South Coliseum, I've never really understood that part of it. If we were going to repurpose that building, we probably would have done it by now as a city.
You would think so. You would think if something was going to happen, it already would have. I would think at some point, though, at some point in time, that building has got to go. Because, like you said, it is screaming to be blown up. Like, it is, it's a bit of an eyesore when you park in those lots over there. I think that's the silver lot that's the closest to it. And every time I'm, you know, going to games and stuff, that's the media lot as well. And when you pull up, it's just like, man, that thing needs to go. Something else needs to be there. But I think you're absolutely right. Like, just because the stadium's changing, or even let's say it was being fully demoed, like, you don't lose the memories of that place. Like, there are still pictures. There are all a different kind of things to keep the memory of that, your memory itself.
You're right.
There are all different types of ways to have memories of a place. So as someone who's not an extremely sentimental person, I definitely don't understand not wanting change to come, because change in this way is so good for this football program. Like, it is huge. It is a must. It is a box that absolutely has to be checked for this stadium to undergo renovations if Memphis is ever going to achieve the goal of being a part of a Power Four conference, or becoming something special. This is a necessary step in that. And I wish that small group of people that is sad about the renovations would understand that it's not only awesome that it's happening, you know, for the program and for the fans, but it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, 100%. Now, what is special, though, about this season is the fact that this Memphis team got a 23 out of a possible 30 first-place votes at AAC Media Days today, and they are at the top of the list when it comes to the AAC Media Poll. What do you think about that, and who do you think, like, I know that UTSA and Tulane and South Florida are right there as the biggest challengers. What do you think about this perch that they are on? They are atop this conference. Everyone thinks they're going to win it, and with that comes a lot more pressure.
Yeah, that is, I guess you could say, if there's a drawback to it, that is it. The target is squarely put on Memphis's back, and there's no questions about that. Because you look around the AAC, and you look at the second and third team on that list in UTSA and Tulane, and obviously, you know, UTSA has had success over the last several years, a little bit more up and down, but Tulane's been extremely consistent over the past couple of years. 2 years ago, they lost Tajay Spears to the draft, and he went, and he's now playing for the Titans. And some people had questions about that. We were in that camp of, what does this offense look like? Is it still dynamic without Tajay Spears there? Obviously, they had other players step up, like Chris Brazell. But Michael Pratt was the biggest reason for all that, and he's now gone. So you're looking at a school in Tulane that has quarterback question marks. They're transitioning to a new quarterback, and they're also transitioning to a new head coach. Those are the two biggest transitions you can have as a football program. One coming from on the, you know, on the field as a player, and one coming from, you know, the head coach. So those are huge, huge changes for Tulane. And then for UTSA, you can say the same thing with Frank Harris. He was there for what felt like forever. And so they lose him, and they've also over the last several years lost a lot of playmakers on that offense from the receiving core. Also, the running back, I cannot remember his name right now for some reason, but I know they lost him as well. So
Sincere McCormick, you remember him? Yep.
Sincere McCormick, there you go. He absolutely murdered Memphis a couple years ago.
I remember. Well, he also ran the ball like 40-some-odd times in that game. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, he did. So you're looking at the second and third programs in the conference that are undergoing massive changes that could completely change the way that they operate on the field, and will change the way that they operate on the field. Losing Frank Harris, losing Michael Pratt, those are two huge losses for those programs. And we talk about quarterback. It's important at every level of football, but at college, at the college level, it does have a little bit of a different meaning, because those are the guys. Like if you can have a not great team and a quarterback can elevate them to being a contender. And so you look at Memphis obviously having the most steady quarterback in the conference, as far as someone who's played a ton of games, who's been extremely successful throughout his career, in Seth Hennigan. And then the second best quarterback in the conference is in South Florida, and Bryce Brown.
Byron Brown,
in his sophomore season. I think he was 17 when he entered college last year, and he was extremely dynamic, both throwing the ball and running the ball. Alex Golish, who was Tennessee's offensive coordinator in 2022, is their head coach, or 2021 is their head coach. So obviously he comes from a very, very good offensive coaching tree, coaching under Josh Heupel. So overall, like, even though I think it's out of more respect for Tulane and UTSA than being 2-3, you kind of chalk that up because of the success that they've had. It, to me, and I know to you as well, because we've had this discussion, South Florida looks like the scariest team outside of Memphis in the conference, and I think it's because they're a football team that can go score at will in a lot of games that they will play this year. And even if you're a team like Memphis, of Memphis's caliber on both sides of the ball, and you have the players that you do, all it takes is, you know, one of those games for a team like that to get hot, who can light up a scoreboard, and then you're in a back and forth with a team that has no issue scoring. So UTSA and Tulane, yes, they've been successful. They have more question marks surrounding them. And I think South Florida, even though they don't necessarily have the defensive talent that some of the other teams in the conference do, I think they can score with anybody, which makes them a huge threat, and they're absolutely dangerous.
And, yeah, you can't forget about last year, 59-50 in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. And Byron Brown, I think, had 5 touchdowns in that game and threw for over 340 yards, ran for 100 yards. They still have Naquan Wright at running back, who's a solid, really good piece to have right there. So, I mean, that team is probably the most scary team to me outside of Memphis in this conference this year. And UTSA, one thing that I think gets under-discussed, they're not going to have Frank Harris Jr. anymore, and that's a guy who set some records there, came back for some NIL money. They still went 9-4 a year ago. But I think that a couple of years ago, when Will Stein, their offensive coordinator, took his talents to Eugene and went to Oregon, you see what that offense has been since he's been there. Bo Nix was phenomenal. He got Bo Nix to be a number 10 overall pick, and now he's going to have Dylan Gabriel. Like, since he left, that offense hasn't been the same. It just has not been quite what we expected it to be, even in his absence.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's another thing that I think people don't put enough stock into, is paying attention to not only head coaches leaving, but coordinators, and even more specifically in college football, offensive coordinators, because a good game plan can beat good talent in college football. You don't see it as much in the NFL, but at the collegiate level, you can see a good scheme beat out talent at times. There are teams and offensive coordinators and head coaches that were offensive coordinators at one point that have a scheme that's so difficult to beat that they don't need the most talent. They just need players that can execute that scheme. And so I think that's another thing that's a little bit underrated. So going back a little bit, talking about Memphis having the target on their back, and I know that, like I said, that can be a drawback because you probably get everybody's best shot at that point. But also on the positive side of them being ranked number one, which obviously overwhelmingly more positive than negative, we've seen this team, you know, be fourth, fifth, sixth over the last couple of years, and that's disappointing going into the season. You know, you don't get that hype going into the season when you're a preseason 4, 5, or 6. I mean, you might have the people that think, okay, they're better than that. They're a little bit underrated this year. But now you look, and this allows fans to be excited going into the year, saying, you know, Memphis is projected to be the best team in the conference. It starts the season off and starts the fan base off on the right foot of knowing where the expectations are, knowing that this team should win the conference and have an opportunity, you know, to win another conference championship and to potentially be a college football playoff team. So I know there's a little bit of a drawback because you're going to get every team's best shot, but at the same time, it is so much better at this point in the year to see Memphis at number one in the American rather than 4, 5, or 6 going into the season and kind of setting those expectations in the middle and just not having a lot of hype around it.
What's the most important position group right now that you may have a question about that will sway this team into being at that number one spot in the AAC? Like, what are you looking at out of all the position groups on the field that you think is going to be the biggest difference, be the inflection point?
I think offensive line is always the easy one to go to because it's so important for this offense to have a successful offensive line, to keep Seth Finnegan upright, to be able to run the ball, to give Seth time to get the ball to Rock Taylor and Demir Blankumsey and some of his other weapons. But to me, if Memphis is going to take that next step, if they're going to be the college football playoff team that a lot of people have said that they could be or said that they thought they would be, then the secondary has to be better this year. It has to be. That you just mentioned the 59-50 game against South Florida last year. Memphis was in way too many shootouts with inferior opponents last season, and that cannot be the case this year. And I think that starts with the secondary being more successful. And on paper, this is the best secondary Memphis has had since I started covering the team in 2018. And I know they had T.J. Carter in that time, who was incredible as a true freshman, but he was it, and his career kind of declined after his freshman year. But you look at what they brought in, the transfers that they have coming in, the players that they're bringing back, and they really do. Like, this secondary has the opportunity to be very good this year. Now, have we said that this defense could be successful?
Don't we have PTSD about making overwhelming statements about the secondary going into the season?
Yes, I absolutely do. I know I've said it at least twice since 2018 that I thought Memphis's defense was going to take a step and be in the top five of the conference, and it just hasn't really happened. But you look at what they brought in, and not only in the secondary, but just in the front seven overall, just the defense overall. And it just feels like if it's going to happen, this is going to be the year. And they, like I said, they brought in a lot of guys that can not only help them, but guys that can be elite in this conference, that can be among the best at their respective positions in the conference. So I think if their secondary is finally, after all the time, able to piece it together, then we can finally see Memphis take that step back to where they were, you know, during the 2019 season. Even though I'm not calling that defense elite, definitely not calling that secondary.
But they were top
elite.
Half of the AAC. That's all you need.
Right, that's all you need. And I mean that more so in the terms of accomplishments, doing what that 2019 team was able to do. If this defense plays up to their potential and what they look like on paper, and the secondary is able to hold up in those games where it could potentially be a shootout, then you reach that pinnacle that, you know, all the fan base is looking at right now and some of the national media as well. So to me, yes, offensive line is important. Quarterbacks, obviously, you know, all positions are important. But for Memphis specifically, it's going to be about what can the secondary do in those games where they play other high-octane offenses.
Greg Rubin needs to have a good year in his final year of eligibility. You need to have Taj Rael from Old Dominion step up and be a good player. Kobe Miner, I really expect him to be a very solid impact transfer coming from Indiana. He was a guy who I don't think only allowed 2 catches for 18 yards against Marvin Harrison Jr. last year, even though Ohio State handled Indiana very easily. Those guys need to step up because I look at the rest of that defense, and quite frankly, I don't have that many concerns. Like no. the linebackers, Chandler Martin and Matt Hudson and guys Elijah like Herring. That, Elijah Herring, all stepping in there. I think they'll be good up front. I think you have Cormonte Hamilton in year five. You have two guys there in the middle, Mon Cole, P.J. Lucas, who can stop the run. I'm not worried necessarily about their front seven. I think that this is one of the beefiest, best front sevens that they've had in a while that can really stop the run. And I mean, Jordan Hankins, the new D.C., is very, very, you know, entrenched in stopping the run. You see what he did against Iowa State in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Zero rushing yards. Right, so I feel good about that. It's all going to hinge, for me, my opinion, on what we see early in the season. I think Florida State will be the first big test, obviously, but it's going to be early in the season. What do we see from that secondary? How can they handle themselves in pressurized moments?
Yeah, it has to hold up. It doesn't have to be a top 10 unit in the country. It doesn't have to be a top 30
years. Although like, it would be nice. It would be nice.
Yes, it would. Yeah, it would absolutely be a cherry on top. But it just has to be serviceable. They just have to be able to get stops. Like, because at a certain point, if you're playing, it doesn't. We don't even have to throw Florida State out there necessarily. But if we're playing, if they're playing another team with a really solid quarterback and solid weapons, even if the front seven's playing well and they're shutting down the run, if a team can just drop back and throw the ball 50 times and have success and move the ball up and down the field, then it doesn't really matter what the front seven's able to do. So it's what holds this entire unit together. It's been the weak point of the Memphis defense over the last several years, because even over the last 5 or 6 years, there have been times when Memphis has had really sound run defenses, but it hasn't mattered and hasn't really been able to show up or make a massive impact, because teams have been able to drop back and throw the ball as many times as they want. And that can't be the case this year. You have to get extra possessions for your offense. Turnovers from the secondary have been up and down over the last several years. So you have to be able to get the ball back for your offense. You have to be able to stop possessions. There are going to be times in this season when Memphis's defense is going to have to be what wins games. And the secondary is going to have to be a big reason for that. They're going to have to be able to slow people down, whether it's a late game stop, whether it's forcing turnovers, whatever the case may be. As good as we think Memphis's offense should be this year, there will be games where it's not perfect. We've seen that. Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's impossible. It's not going to be perfect. We saw it go back to the 2019 season and watch that Tulane game. And I know some crazy stuff had to, or the Tulsa game, sorry. And I know some crazy stuff had to happen for them to win that game, but that was one of those games where they were off, and it's going to happen. And you have to have other units step up in those moments. And so if the secondary can be that unit, then I really do. I think Memphis can reach the lofty goals that have been set for them. But if the secondary falls flat again and they're in shootouts every week, they're going to lose more games than they should because of that.
Yeah, now, what's your confidence level when we look at this offensive side of the ball? We know Seth Hennigan, Rock Taylor, Demir Blankensee, they should be givens. But we've seen the last 3 years, it's been a mixed bag with that run game, and I know you already brought up the offensive line, but I think they've recruited it relatively well. And when I talked to Ryan behind the scenes, he says there's like 8 guys he feels confident with experience that have played at a high level that he feels like he can throw out there at any given time. But what's your confidence level that this offense is going to be more like last year with the balance where Blake Watson ran for 1,000 yards and you had an 1,000-yard receiver, as opposed to what it was in 2022 and 2021 where you didn't have that 1,000-yard rusher and you weren't as balanced and Seth Hennigan had to do it all on his own? We looked at last year when he had that 1,000-yard rusher. I don't think it's any surprise he had his best statistical year in a Tiger uniform.
Yeah, it's all related. It all goes together and plays hand in hand. And so I would say my confidence level is probably about an 8 to 8.5 out of 10. Because even though they did take some big losses on this offensive line, losing McKylen Pounders, losing Jacob Light, losing some of these linchpins of their offensive line, I think Ryan and the staff did a very good job of going out and finding experienced players to replace those guys that can kind of step in and immediately keep that momentum going. You're not relying on a true freshman center to step in. You're relying on a guy that's played a lot of football and Trent Holler, who a lot of people are excited about. So I think the offensive line will be very similar to what it was last year as far as success. And honestly, possibly even better because like you said, and I agree with what Ryan is mentioning, having 8 guys, you know, being 8 or 9 guys deep is paramount at this level because you're going to have
injuries. You're just going to.
Yeah, you're, you're going to have people that need to rotate in. And if you're 8 or 9 deep and you feel confident about that many guys, that means you can likely withstand whatever injuries happen throughout the season. You know, when players miss a game or two or a few games, you have players that can step up and fill those shoes. So not even only to mention the offensive line, but also the running back room with Mario Anderson and Sutton Smith. Those are two players that I have a lot of confidence in because we saw what Mario Anderson was able to do in the SEC. And I think just football math and football knowledge says if you can do that at the SEC level, you should be able to do much more at the AAC level. And then with Sutton Smith, I think he is still a gem that is waiting to be unlocked. I think his potential is extremely high. I think he and Blake Watson were very similar, which I think held Sutton Smith back last year. And Mario Anderson's not a bad pass catcher, but he's a more between-the-tackles runner,
yep.
Bigger bodied back, and I think Sutton Smith is really going to be able to benefit from that. I think they'll use him more, you know, out in the slot, use his receiving abilities more this year. And also, he's just electric when he gets the ball in his hands, you know, whether that is out in space on a screen or on an angle route or whatever that may be, or if you get, you know, just a toss or an outside zone or, you know, any way you can get him the ball in space, I think he's electric with that. So I think they're a very, very formidable thunder and lightning combo. I think the offensive line is going to be just as good, if not slightly better this year. And then you know, we already mentioned the weapons. We know what Seth Hennigan has to work with, and I think we all probably feel pretty confident in a receiving core and in the tight end room. So I think as long as this offensive line gels the way that a lot of people think it will, and then the running back room, I don't even have to say if a lot of people think it will, the running back room is going to be good. So if the front five are able to gel, I think this offense is just as good as they were last year. But honestly, I think the ceiling is higher this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the poll reflects that. The poll, 23 of 30 first place votes for your Memphis Tigers out there in the AAC preseason media poll. They are number one by a fair amount. Talking with Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Looks like most everybody in the NFL has reported for training camp. Did you get a load of Joe Burrow's look heading into camp today? Slim Shady showed up for the Cincinnati Bengals after he got cleared yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, this is something that you and I have talked about a lot throughout the offseason. The injury that he had on his wrist was very rare. I read up on it a lot throughout the offseason, and a lot of people said that this is not a football injury. Like, you hardly ever hear about this injury in football. And so I know there's been some concern surrounding him. How does he come out of this injury? He's been a little bit injury-prone throughout his career. He's ended 2 seasons on IR, won his rookie year on the ACL, and then last year with the wrist. And so I know people have been concerned, but if he's cleared and he's 100%, which we're assuming that's what that means, then I don't think he has any problems. But I saw the new hairdo.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, he's an interesting fellow, man. He is. He tries to. I don't know. I mean, stylistically, I don't know if he dresses himself or styles himself, or he has somebody else doing it for him.
I think he said
Jamar Chase does a little bit for him.
Yeah, he's come out and said it before. Like, no, I don't. You know, yeah. I don't really know that much about it. I just like clothes, and I have people that pick it out for me. Like, I'm not going into depth on picking all this stuff out. But yeah, he does seem like a very interesting player. I feel like he's one of the more soft spoken, in a sense, star players in the league. Like, I feel like so many star players, we know their personality, or we kind of get a feel for what their personality is. With him, I have no idea.
Right.
Like, you watch interviews with him, and he does have, like, that quiet confidence, but he also is just overall, like, he's genuinely, I think he's a quiet person. He kind of seems a little bit awkward some of the times. Like, he does seem a little bit awkward. So I don't know. He's one of those star players that it's hard to get a read on, and he seems to definitely march to the beat of his own drum.
Yes, and I think it's topical, too. NFLPA Executive Director Lloyd Howell basically told ESPN today that they're having discussions about that 18th regular season game in the NFL, and that's not surprising.
Yeah.
Now, Joe Burrow gave his opinion on that. I'll get to that in a second. But what do you think about an 18th regular season game, adding one more game? I would just generally guess about you that you don't mind more football. Like, you're not,
no.
You're probably not opposed to it.
Nope, not at all. If I was an NFL player, I probably would be, but I'm clearly not, so I'm not opposed to it at all. The more football we get, the better. The further it goes into the year, I mean, to me, add as many games as you want from a fan perspective. Now, I know the players are concerned about it and how much more of an effect just, you know, 2 years ago, a 17th game was added. Now, the conversation started a year later, maybe less than a year later, about adding an 18th game. And so it's like, it's been 16 games for a long time, and to quickly jump up to 18, I'm sure has been a little bit surprising for players and everything. But you mentioned, we'll talk about Joe Burrow's idea a little bit more. I think it made the most sense. I think there is a way to do it to make the players at least agreeable to it. I don't think they'll be happy about it, just because you got to think, if you're playing 18 regular season games and then four playoff games, if you're a wild card team or anyone other than a number one seed, you're playing a 22-game NFL season. Yep. That would go from the beginning of the first weekend of September until the third week of February,
right.
I believe. Because I think right now it's the first Sunday of February is the Super Bowl. If you added a bye week and another game, you'd be looking at the third week of February. So football would be played almost until March, and you start playing games in September. That's not talking about OTAs and training camp and all that stuff. So really, they're pretty much from July to March in full-blown football mode, not just working out or not just studying and doing film work. That's full-blown, like, contact football from end of July, early August to almost the end of February.
Yeah, and Joe Burrow's idea, for those that haven't heard it, it sounds like most NFL players are just sort of accepting this 18th game is going to come, because the NFL is going to make such a damn push for it, and the NFLPA is going to probably fold, because they always seem to fold in these conversations. But Joe Burrow's idea, he had it on Pardon My Take with Barstool Sports, and he basically said 18 games, you have two bye weeks, one of them is a full bye week in the middle of the season, and you pick Pro Bowlers then, like an all-star weekend for the NFL, and then you have the Super Bowl week on the weekend of President's Day. So then we would have basically the day off after the Super Bowl. I think that, for the consumer, for the player, I think most people can get behind that. I mean, the player obviously has to get used to the 18 games in general, but I don't think they're going to have much of a choice. But of all of the schedules and the ideas that I have heard pushed out there, Joe Burrow's is by far the best, because you kill two birds with one stone. You get the day off after the Super Bowl. You treat it as a national holiday. And then you can actually maybe get more eyes on the Pro Bowl. You can maybe get people to tune in a little bit more, because it'll be the only thing on your TV.
Yeah, I think it really is a great idea, because I'll start with the Pro Bowl being in the middle of the year, obviously following a similar trend to what other professional leagues do. And the NBA All-Star Weekend is always much more talked about than the Pro Bowl, because it's still right in the thick of things. It's still in the middle of the season. Players are still in the swing of things, I think, more so than the Pro Bowl, and I think that's kind of why it's not been much, especially over the last several years. You have so many players now that opt out of it.
And they want to go on vacation. They don't want to be there.
They're just ready to be done by that point in the year. Most of those players that opt out have probably just lost playoff games, and it's just not an ideal time to have an all-star game. It kind of feels celebratory, I guess, you know, being a Pro Bowler, being an all-star. It's kind of a celebratory thing, and you've got to think a lot of those players that are playing in it or have been voted to it are just coming off of playoff losses over the last two or three weeks before that. And so it kind of takes away from the celebratory feeling of it. But if you have it in the middle of the year, most of those players that are going to be Pro Bowlers are still going to be in contention by that point. There'll be a lot more hype around it. I think from a player's perspective, I think they'll be a lot more excited about it. And then from a consumer or fan perspective as well, it's like, okay, there's still so much intrigue going on. It's not, we already know who's about to play in the Super Bowl. We're looking way past the Pro Bowl to the Super Bowl already. It's like, okay, we don't have games this week, so we'll live with the Pro Bowl,
right,
you know, for a week. We'll deal with the Pro Bowl celebrations for a week, because there's still a lot more football left to be played. It's not just looking ahead to the biggest game of the year. So I think that is a great idea. And then, you know, obviously the second bye week as well. Like, if you're going to add a game, if you're going to go 18 games, you have to have something else in there. You can't play that many games consecutively, you know, over an 18-week span and have one week of rest is a little insane. And then also having President's Day the day after the Super Bowl, how long have people been asking for the Monday after the Super Bowl to be a holiday? I mean, that has been a conversation forever, you know, especially since it became such a big deal. You know, the Super Bowl became such a celebration. You have parties every, you know, everybody's watching the Super Bowl, and a lot of people are partaking and going to work the next day without much motivation at all. Yeah. So it's been something that's been clamored
hung over and with a stomach ache.
Yeah, coming in with the sunglasses on with the stomach ache. So I think that's another part of it that is, it's a wonderful idea because so many people have been begging for it for so long.
I agree, and I hope that cooler heads prevail, and I hope the NFLPA and the NFL, the powers that be, agree upon that type of schedule because I just think it makes the most sense for their product going forward. But we shall see.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition. You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.